This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. Jonathan Hollins has spent 6 years serving the Board of Governors and various other committees on the USEA and USEF. And as the convention gets underway this week, he reflects on his contribution and what he'll miss. But before we hear from John, our training tip this week comes from Bea de Grazia. Bea, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Chris.
So what do you have for us as our tip?
Well, as it is a little bit of a downtime now between the last event and the start of the next season, I like to make sure that our riders are keeping in some sort of shape and also educating themselves a little bit further on how to make themselves better riders. So I would say what I'd like to talk about as a tip would be lunging or lunge lessons, or what you can think about when you're on the lunge line to increase your success of having more of a, you know, individualized grouping of muscles and how your biomechanics work. So I have just sort of a basic first thing that I like to do when I put a rider on the lunge, and I start to evaluate how they're interacting with their horse and the way the horse moves.
Okay, so how would you start then once you first get them on the lunge?
Okay, so I suggest that the horse that they use is just something that will stay steady, because you're going to be changing your balance and pressure and moving arms and legs around. So Jack LaGoff was one of the first people. No, actually, Jimmy Wofford was the first person that actually gave a whole group of us lunge lines and an education that I think we all use to this day. And some of them were definitely for young teenagers, because they included riding side saddle or standing on your feet or all sorts of things that are a little extreme for your everyday rider. But everything came down to the rhythm and learning how to move your body in sync with the horse and to find the different balance in your seat bones, the way you use your upper body, and, you know, how to, without getting really scientific about it, use your core muscles. Because a long time ago, no one really spoke about core muscles. But what I think is really important is that people actually take a look at the structure of the pelvis, because, you know, it first starts with the seat. And when you're on the lunge line, you really should use that time to develop your seat. And, you know, the pelvis is really actually quite complex, because you have four joints, and then the shape and angle is different, completely different for men and women, and everyone's individual. So hopefully the person on the ground takes that into account and doesn't try to make you look like Ingrid Klimsky or Michael Young, because you're not going to. You have your own specific way of moving through your pelvis. And so then you have the four joints of the pelvis, and then you have all the bones that, you know, the sacrum, the coccyx, the right and the left hip, and all that pelvis anchors the power of your hip and your thigh and your abdomen. So I think that's sort of the main part that you focus on in your lunge lessons, is how that works and, you know, how to move each part individually. So some of the exercises that we use are just really simple, like just at the walk, making sure that you're safe. You know, you could drop your stirrups and then anchor your reins in a certain way so that they're not getting under your horse's legs. But just one thing that really helps is to slide your hand palm down onto the seat of your saddle, sort of through the side coming in by your hip, and then raise your hip up and sit on your knuckles, just of one hand, so that you can actually feel your seat bone. And that's another thing with actually knowing what the pelvis looks like. The seat bone is, some people don't even know what that is. So it's rami, which is actually just sort of a rounded shape part of your pelvis. So you sit on the rami, or the seat bone, and then raise your opposite hand straight up past your ear, fingertips straight, elbow straight, so that you are really, your posture is very well aligned, so that your shoulders are even over your hips, and then your arm is straight so that your torso is straight. And just walk around, feeling the horse's hind legs move. You know, the instructor, it's really good for them to say, okay, which leg is lifting, so that you feel it through your seat bone. And then at the same time, you're controlling your upper body. And then switch hands, and because everybody's slightly off one side to the other. So this is something you don't need a lunge line for. You can do it, you know, without a lunge, just walking around your arena. And it's so helpful. If you have mirrors, that's great. Your instructor, just making sure, or your buddy, husband, whatever, that you're really aligned. And just body awareness. I mean, it affects your horses so much in everything you do. That, you know, this is the one thing that will benefit you almost as much as anything else. You know, you need to be fit, of course. But during the winter months, just really take yourself back and think about all those things that people just keep nattering on about in your position. And, you know, we have a lot of fun with it. I work with a lot of younger people, so I can bring out all the torture devices. I've broken a few bones, so I have neck braces, I have clavicle braces, we use ACE bandages, and, you know, things that will give you structure. And then, like, ACE bandages are great because it's movable, and if you can just sort of really feel the security of how deep your seat needs to be to work with your horse's back. I mean, the horse's back is very sensitive. I mean, sometimes, like, thoroughbreds feel like boards, and you wonder which is going to give first, you know, your back or their back. And I remember riding for hours and hours and hours trying to sit the trot and just hanging onto the saddle like a monkey. And then all of a sudden, you know, the epiphany comes when the horse actually relaxes and lets you in. I mean, honest to God, dressage is great, and you can really enjoy sitting the trot. So, Chris, I think that's sort of a convoluted tip of the day, but really my thing is get back to the basics, think about your seat, you know, investigate it a little bit more so that you're a better partner with your horse.
Buzzwords these days are core strengths and rider biomechanics and cross-training.
Right, and there are so many people. Sally Swift was one who used imagery. I mean, when you're on the lunge, you know, there's so many things about how to really get people to understand the feel of what they should look like and what they should be doing. And Sandy Howard out here on the West Coast was so into anatomy, and she studied, I mean, if you can find anything on any of these people, just to read up on, they were real educators, and you know, it's really enlightening to just spend a little bit of time and you know, love your sport through being a little bit more educated.
Good advice. Thank you very much indeed for our tip this week, Bea.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Glad to be on the show.
And now Jonathan Hollings joins me to talk about his tenure on the USEA board. And I began by asking him how the committee work started for him.
It's funny. It's a very long story. I'll try not to draw it too much. But I think at moments in your life when things are changing, and this would be one of those times, and it's not some big, you know, big, huge moment probably to most people, but to me it is. It's been a great 6 years, and you sort of look back and think, how did this all begin? From a kid who was growing up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, who didn't even know that Young Riders was happening in Chicago right down the road, to somebody who now is coming off of the USEA Board of Governors after having been on it for 6 years. It's pretty cool. And really, for me, where it all started was in 2008 when we had the safety crisis. I sort of saw that happening, and I was there at Red Hills that day. Actually lost a horse. And for me, I came out of that, one, really appreciating the eventing community more than I knew. I think we all know how great everybody in eventing is, but when something really tragic happens and you see how everybody comes together, you sort of appreciate them even more. And then I thought to myself, you know, I'm not sure what the problem is, but I know that I need to be part of the solution. And so at that moment, really that day was sort of a bad day, as a dark day as that was for me personally and for the sport. That was the day that I decided I needed to try to do something to make the sport better in a lot of ways, not just due to that, but in a lot of ways.
Because committee work is not for everyone to get involved in that aspect of the sport, but there are so many areas of expertise that are required on these committees. John, what did you feel that you were bringing apart from being an active athlete yourself?
Well, you know, I think at the time, I thought what probably a lot of people right now think as they sit here listening to me, which was, who are all these old farts sitting on these committees running this sport, and why don't I as a rider have a say? That's what I thought at the time. I thought, surely they need to have an athlete's voice. And we had athletes on there. We had Darren on there, and Karen was on there. Those guys did such a great job, and there were others. We had Carol Kozlowski on there, and Phyllis Dawson was on there. There's this nameless amount of riders and athletes that are actually on these boards. But at that moment, I didn't see that. I just thought, gosh, I need to get involved, and at least if things go wrong, then I feel like I've done my best to try to make things better.
Well, during your tenure on the board, particularly, John, what have you seen has changed in the sport, and what have you been a part of?
I think the big picture that I've seen is I feel like people are more accountable now as riders and as athletes. People are taking more part. They feel like they have more of a voice. I don't know if that's what I contributed or not, but I'd like to think I had a small part in that, you know, people sort of, riders now feel like, okay, I can get involved, I can make a difference, I can say something and somebody's going to listen to what I have to say. And I would hope that that's sort of the big picture thing that I've been able to do. I got to be chairman of the Professional Horsemen's Council, and that was awesome because you get to really sort of be the voice for the athletes when you do that. That was pretty great. We did a few things there. I think we did the controversial rider representative thing, which has had to evolve since we first got it through. But I think at the end of the day, what that has done is given riders the ability that if they see something going into a competition that they have a question about or think that they need to voice their opinion, that they now know there's really a very open channel to be able to do that. And it's made that communication so much better between the athletes and the officials. So I'm pretty proud of that. You know, the other thing that we've done is we've, through the Professional Horsemen's Council, we were able to pretty significantly change the warm-up procedure and sort of the rules and the warm-ups for the horse trials. And I think that's made things a lot better as well. We now sort of Darren Chacha got it started, but I was fortunate enough to sort of be there with Gina Miles as well, who was a big part of it, and get it so that we were able to have solid fences and warm-up. I mean, that seems like just common practice now that, gosh, when you go to cross-country warm-up, you have solid fences, but it wasn't too long ago we didn't have that. And I think that has made it so much easier to sort of get your horses ready to leave the start box, especially the young, greener horses. And then having additional fences in the show jumping warm-up as well, I think that's been very helpful. That probably has been more helpful for the upper-level people. I think the cross-country warm-up has been helpful. Quite honestly, more for the lower level horses, and the show jumping more for the upper level. So we've really tried to sort of bring everybody in and try to help all ends of the sport, young horses, amateurs, and professionals. So I think, you know, those are just a couple of things that we've done. And then I guess the other thing, big picture, that I hope we've done is through that Professional Horsemen's Council, we've been able to sort of make it known that we have certain priorities when we go to competitions. We want to make sure we always have the best footing possible, the safest courses possible, and the most educational courses possible. And I think that's that's not a job that's ever done. We have to make sure we keep working on that. But I would dare to say that things are better. Footing is better now. The standard of courses are better now. And I'm not saying that, gosh, we as the riders got that done. But I think, you know, a little bit the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And I think that we were at least a part of making our case. And I think that the course designers and the officials sort of happily have done everything they can to make things better. And I would hope that we had something to do with that.
Well, change can often be met with some resistance, as we all know, John, with committee work particularly. What did you feel was controversial about the rider involvement, given all the positive changes that have been made?
I think the thing is, and look, I can relate to this more now than I could when I got involved. When you sit on boards, or, you know, I'm not an official, but I've seen it. When you're an official, or I have been an organizer, when you see it from the organizer side, what you quite often see are riders who have legitimate concerns, but really what they just like to do is complain. They don't actually want to fix the things. That's sort of the stereotypical feeling that I think people who are not currently competing at the top level feel. They feel a little bit like, okay, yeah, you know what, John, you might have a legitimate concern, but you're not the one who's been out here busting your tail, setting up this course and getting this all ready. So just simmer down and you do your thing, we'll do ours. And again, as an organizer, I kind of understand, you know, the story I tell is I remember organizing at Ocala one year. And I'm out there on Friday night before cross country, and the guys, the builders, are killing themselves, and Peter is busting his tail trying to make sure everything's in order, and I'm sort of running around trying to fill in the holes here and there, figuratively fill in the holes here and there. And then quite literally, to fill in a hole, a competitor came up to me and said, there's a hole between fence 6 and 7. I said, oh my gosh, I'll get right over to it. I went over there, and it was literally a divot in the ground with a pile of dirt next to it. And I took my foot and I pushed the dirt over and filled in the hole. And I thought to myself, really, you can't even solve that problem. Like, I had to stop what I was doing and come over here and do that. And that's a little bit the stereotypical, I think, feeling that a lot of times officials and builders and designers feel is like, okay, you know, you guys see the problem, but you got to be a part of the solution too.
Right. It demands a team effort, doesn't it, to succeed? And
I think
importantly, obviously, what you've brought to the table has seen some changes during your tenure. Let's talk about some of the other committees that you've been on, John, as well.
So obviously I'm on the board, and I did the Professional Horsemen's Council. One of the really cool things that I got to do was I was on the nominating committee. So we were responsible for finding new board members and fielding nominations from the membership, which, funny enough, we don't get many of. So that's one thing I'd say here now as everybody's listening is, you know, if you want to be involved or you know somebody who does, nominate them. Because, I mean, literally when I was on the nominating committee, if we got 3 or 4 nominations from the membership, that would be about it. They are very welcome because we want people who want to be involved. So I got to be on the nominating committee, and that was really fun because you get to meet a lot of people. And I guess that's the one thing about the board as well. I remember when I got on the board, there was another guy who got on the board the same year as me. And he's coming off this year as well, in Mike Winter. And I met Mike, and I thought to myself, this is a numbers guy. We're never going to get along. Like, he's coming in, he's all about numbers, and I'm all about ideas, and I don't know about this guy. And I have to say, he's one of the people that I respect more than anyone else now on that board, because he brings his own unique perspective. And I would never have appreciated him or gotten to know him if I hadn't been on that board. So it's pretty cool when you're on all these different things together. You get to start to appreciate all different people from different walks of life that are passionate about the same thing in horses.
And then, of course, you've become involved with the U.S. Equestrian Federation as a result of your roles with the USEA too, haven't you?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. So when you're on the USEA board, I think people start to realize that, you know, you actually have something to contribute. And I think I would like to think, because of some of the good work that I was able to do with the USEA, then they asked me to be on some USEF boards and committees as well. So I'm actually on the USEF Eventing Technical Committee currently, which is really cool, because that committee actually is the committee that you know, it's funny, the USEA doesn't write the rules. They can come up with some great ideas, though, and then they pass them forward, and the USEF is actually the keeper of the rules, so that technical committee sort of fields all of those different requests or concerns or rule changes and things like that that the USEA maybe comes up with. So it's been really cool to get to see how the system works and get to be a part of that USEF technical committee. And then I'm also currently on the Active Athletes Committee, which is great because that's just a big honor because that actually is from the athletes who nominate you and ask you to be on there. So I love being on that committee, and you have a little bit more of a foot in the door of high performance there, which is cool. And then I'm also on the competitions committee, which is really cool. It's actually, I won't lie, it's a little bit hard for me to follow sometimes because that is a committee of people who are in charge of different competitions, organizers, athletes, in all disciplines under USEF. So last night or yesterday afternoon, we actually had a meeting and, you know, we went over hunter jumper rules, hackney pony rules, driving rules, dressage rules, actually not one single rule for eventing. So I sat there listening to all these rules yesterday and I actually didn't have much to say, but it's really interesting listening to these very important people in their disciplines and how they run their sports. It's pretty neat.
Well, as your tenure comes to an end at the convention this week, John, on these committees, is this something you're going to miss?
I'm going to miss it tremendously. You know, it's funny. You do this in the beginning, and it seems like, gosh, 6 years is a really long time to be on the board, and it is. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to miss all the conference calls and all of that. You know, because I'm on the board, I'm also on the executive committee, so we have monthly calls because I'm the VP of Active Athletes. So we have monthly calls for that. And I'm not going to necessarily miss all of the meetings. But I am going to miss it. I mean, it's been a huge part of my life the last 6 years as well. And, I'm going to be off of the board because of that. I'll be off the executive committee of the USEA. So I'm certainly losing. I'm certainly stepping off of two pretty important groups right there. And then there's some other stuff that I'm not sure I would like to think that I'll still be involved on some committees and things. Going forward, I'm also still on the cross country fence design and safety task force that was put together. And I co-chair that with Sarah Broussard. So I still get to do that. And I think that group is going to be something that's going to last long term to try to make sure we're always looking at ways to improve the safety of the sport. So I'll still be involved in a couple of different things, but you know, the two biggies that take the most amount of time I'm going to be off of, and I'll be a little bit melancholy about it for sure. I mean, it's been a pretty tumultuous beginning with all of the safety stuff that was going on, and Kevin Baumgartner did such a great job as president then, sort of shepherding us through that and dealing with the USEF and the USEA relationships. And then we had Brian Sabo come in, and he was a great president and did some amazing things to sort of bring the professional voice out. And then now we have Diane Pitts, who really brings a whole other side to it. And I was one of the people who sort of suckered her into taking that job. So sorry, Diane. But she's a great president as well. And I think we're going to see over the next 2 years that she has left in her term, again, some additional voice for the high performance side of things and trying to bring everybody together. So it's cool. All the stuff that's happened, and I'm a little bit sorry to see myself stepping off right now.
But you get some of your life back, though, John.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I mean, I do. I get to have a little bit more free time and all of that, but I don't know. I think somebody, and I know it's not a new saying, but somebody said to me one time, you know, if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person. And I like to be busy. I like to have stuff to do. You know, it's a little bit like occasionally about once a month, I'll get a day where I can sit inside and watch football. And I got to tell you, after I sit down and watch a football game and sort of hang out for the afternoon, it takes a lot to get myself motivated to go out and do something again. So I like to stay moving and busy and have lots of things going on. Otherwise, I think you can get sedentary pretty quickly.
Well, I think a lot of people would agree that you are a really good quintessential committee type of person. But if you weren't doing this in the horse business, what do you think you would do?
No, I don't know. I have no idea. I've wanted to be involved in horses since I was probably a sophomore in high school. I mean, I knew I wanted to do it, and I didn't know what exactly I was going to be able to do. I actually wrote in a clinic with Lucinda Green, and she asked me what I wanted to do with horses, and I told her I had no idea, and she's the one who got me my working student position with Peter Gray, and I left from high school to go do that, much to my parents' dismay at the time, and I sort of said to myself, you know, I'm going to go do this and give it a shot, and at least if I'm not any good, I'll know. I won't spend my whole life wondering what I could have done. Had it not worked out as a rider, I think I probably really would have pursued being a blacksmith. I did that for a summer in high school, and I really loved that. So I think horses would have been a part of my life no matter what. I think, you know, most people that are involved in horses would tell you that, you know, whatever they're doing right now, if they were doing something different, they would still have it as a big part of their life, and for sure I would.
Well, clearly you're an example to anyone who is thinking of becoming a committee member, that everyone has something to bring to the party, and I know that you would encourage them to get involved with the sports administration.
Absolutely. You know, again, I guess that's sort of my, if I could say one thing to everybody, that would absolutely be it. I joke sometimes in the board, and I think sometimes they think I'm serious, but I'm really just sort of joking around, where I say, you know, this is my idea, but you guys are way smarter than me, so you figure it out. And, you know, occasionally they'll laugh, and sometimes they look a little uncomfortable, but it's the truth. You know, I have high school education. I didn't go to university because I went and pursued my riding. I was very fortunate to be able to do that. So you sit there in that board with some super well-educated, extremely intelligent people, and it's a little bit humbling for me sometimes that they'll listen to what I have to say. It's pretty cool, to be honest, because you meet these people and you think, gosh, they are so far out of my league in intelligence, and yet here they are listening to what I have to say and what I'm trying to contribute. It's pretty cool. And I guess that is the point, you know. Again, not to get like too reflective here, but I'm just some kid from Milwaukee. I did my first event when I was about 14. I didn't know anything about it. And again, until I left to go to Canada to work for Peter at 19, I didn't even know Young Riders was happening in Chicago. It's possible for anyone in this country, if they want to do it, to get involved and to have a voice and to make themselves a life in eventing. I think one of the most important people that I've actually gotten to know, and one of probably the most influential people in the sport, certainly within the USEA, is Jill Whitehouse. You know, she really has been there the entire time that I've been there, and certainly before, and is going to be there after. And I think as the CEO, sometimes she doesn't get all the credit that she deserves. But if you're going to talk about who probably the most influential person within the USEA is, it would be Joe. And she has this amazing ability to be able to be a leader and guide people and guide discussions and groups, and yet speaks the most softly and quietly and politely of anybody on that board. I think, you know, sometimes when I want people to hear me, I tend to speak up and talk louder. And Joe has this ability to just remain calm and the same, and you listen more intently the more she speaks. So I just want to make sure that I get to mention how influential on everything she has been, and certainly a big part of my education throughout the entire process of being able to be a member of the board on the USEA.
Very well said, John, and I know your contribution has been very much appreciated here at the USEA, so thank you very much again for all that you've done.
Hey, thank you. I won't be going far. I really appreciate it.
And you too can become involved in committee work. There are lots of opportunities which you can learn about during the convention this week. And you can find daily reports and photos from the convention on the website at useventing.com. We'll also have a review on the podcast next week of the convention highlights. Don't forget, this podcast can be downloaded from the iTunes Store to your smartphone podcast apps. Until the next time, thank you for listening and enjoy your eventing.